Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore. Welcome, Matthew. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Well, the road to the 75th anniversary of the Allied victory over Nazi Germany was long and paved with disputes. It has now come and gone. And of course, in Russia, where the May 9th Victory Day ceremonies have been very elaborate, particularly under President Vladimir Putin, this year the celebrations were scaled down substantially due to the coronavirus. There was no military parade in Red Square, no Immortal Regiment march on the streets of central Moscow. Putin laid flowers at the Eternal Flame at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier outside the Kremlin and delivered his customary address from there. Matthew, you were there in Moscow. You are there. What was it like on Victory Day? Tell us about your impressions.
Well, firstly, I'd say that you say the disputes are the led up to this anniversary are over, but I'm sure they're going to carry on. It's kind of like a fixed part of relations between Russia and the West. But as far as Victory Day in Moscow goes, I mean, it was, I've been here on several May 9ths in the past, and it was pretty amazing to witness such a subdued version of Victory Day in Moscow and to see the city so empty on May 9th. I mean, in any other year, the holiday would bring thousands of people onto the streets, and a lack of sunshine was almost unheard of. The Kremlin has been known, obviously, to send out planes equipped with cloud dispersal technology to ensure that there'd be no rain on its parade on Red Square. But that parade, obviously, this year didn't happen, despite months of planning, and with the skies overcast and grey on Saturday, even the celebratory flyover above Moscow, following, as you say, Putin's address at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, was pretty underwhelming to many people, I think. So I took a walk around the city centre later in the morning after the flyover to gauge the mood and really to note whatever scenes I came across. But there were very few people around, which is perhaps a testament to people's adherence to the lockdown measures, but it's more likely just a result of a lack of events in the capital, because the crowds that traditionally gather in Moscow on May 9th are pretty heavily from outside the capital, and obviously this year people had no reason or no defensible reason to travel. So there were some communist politicians who tried to stage a public event in honor of Victory Day on Tverskaya Street, the main street of Moscow, but it was thwarted by police, who actually throughout the city had a pretty heavy presence on Saturday enforcing the lockdown. So most of the Victory Day events were online in the end, and the authorities, I think, did quite a good job of offering an alternative selection of ways to mark the milestone. There were online concerts, exhibitions, and even, as you mentioned, the Immortal Regiment March, which usually gathers millions of people on the streets of Russian cities, holding black and white photos of relatives who died in World War II. Even that event migrated to the internet this year. So it was pretty surreal in many ways, but I think the people, found ways to commemorate, over 26 million service soldiers who are estimated to have died in World War II in their own personal ways.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that last thing you mentioned is quite important. From my experience there, there's a bit of a separation between, I mean, people watch parade, but there's certainly, there's the state celebrations, ceremonies, and there's the personal kind of individual and family ceremonies and just remembrances, of relatives who were killed, relatives who survived. And, it's obviously a thing that affects the whole country. As you say, I imagine, for many people, in terms of their personal kind of feelings and what they were thinking was not not dissimilar to past years. You mentioned, I think I didn't mean to say that the disputes are over. Certainly, one thing, Putin's address, I would say, was not too different from some in the past. I think last year he also made no mention of any contribution to victory over Nazi Germany by the Western allies. Though he did this year have some phone calls with some of them, that which may be similar to last year, but also no veiled suggestion, as he has sometimes done in the past, that the United States is now kind of the main global threat. He's used his Victory Day speech sometimes in the past to make that suggestion. Of course, he does always use it to call for solidarity and cooperation among among the countries that took part. Although he focuses mainly on the Soviet Union in his actual Victory Day address. So I would say address fairly similar, but obviously will not obviously these disputes between Russia and other countries, in the former Warsaw Pact, the former Soviet satellites, and also further west, will certainly persist.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's quite amazing, really, when you analyze his past May 9th speeches, which he obviously delivers every year, to see how they kind of reflect the current political and geopolitical climate as well. So, this suggestion that, the U.S. is the new global threat, a lot of these kinds of hints, I think, reached their peak in, 2014 and 15, when obviously Russia was pronounced by many Western leaders, as a pariah state, and, sanctions were imposed on Moscow, and there was really kind of a peak in acrimony, especially when it relates to the past. We had the 70th anniversary of World War II then, and this kind of perennial sore spot for Moscow, which is the lack of credit, as they see it, that the Soviet Union should be due for its sacrifice in World War II. It really reached the peak then, when Moscow was obviously also using historical politics in the narrative that it was advancing about events in Ukraine. So, Putin's annual speech is actually a very interesting kind of barometer of the mood. But obviously this year, with such a pared down celebration, I think that he probably minimized the amount of political digs he wanted to issue, and it was quite a tame speech, I think, in many ways, but perhaps accurately so.
Right, I would agree with that. I think sort of maybe felt that the mood wasn't right for that kind of thing. And as you say, the peak of that sort of thing in terms of the U.S. particularly, may have passed. That's very, very interesting. Of course, the reason for the subdued May 9th ceremonies in Moscow and Russia was COVID-19, which is continuing to spread fairly quickly there. There have been more than 10,000 new cases reported, I think, daily for the last 8 days or so. Today may have been a new record. I can't remember. It was more than 11,000 new infections confirmed. And Russia, I believe, is now the third worldwide in terms of the total number of confirmed infections, which is over 220,000. The official death toll now exceeds 2,000, which is actually quite low given the number of infections compared to other countries. Matthew, you had one of the first articles looking specifically at this question. What are some of the reasons for the relatively low death toll in Russia? I take it one factor is the way deaths are categorized.
One of several, but probably the main one, I think, according to the consensus at the moment, at least. So actually, yesterday, the Moscow Times reported that the Russian health ministry had recorded a 20% rise in mortality year on year in April. And considering the differences in overall mortality rates during the pandemic, which are considered to be the most objective indicator we have of the rise in fatality, of the actual rise in fatality rates, that's quite a significant figure from the health ministry. There are also indications that the authorities will begin to list deaths among patients who have tested positive from coronavirus but did not die directly from the virus, which would be a change in how Russia codes deaths using using the official terminology, which will actually bring the country much closer in line with other countries and may result in a significant increase in the official COVID-19 death toll in coming days, which, as you say, has just passed 2,000. But it's this disparity in how deaths are coded, i.e., you know, how they're ascribed to various causes, that has really contributed to Russia's status as an outlier with by far the lowest case fatality ratio among countries with the world's highest infection rates from coronavirus. But another issue aside from how deaths are categorized is that while testing has been widespread in Russia, I think officially over 5.5 million coronavirus tests have been carried out as of today. There are multiple reports that the tests Russia uses are not very effective. So they detect only a small minority, perhaps 20% of coronavirus cases. That, of course, will also impact the death figures, since if you pronounce a patient COVID positive, if you can't pronounce the patient COVID positive, you can't ascribe their eventual death to the virus, right?
Right.
But the WHO, the World Health Organization, has issued new recommendations for how death should be coded almost a month ago now, actually. And again, there are signs that the practice in Russia will change, and we'll see a more representative figure coming from the government. But I think it's also very much worth noting that Russia is far from alone in facing accusations of not reporting its real death toll from coronavirus. I mean, various studies have shown that accurately tracking that figure, especially with a fast-moving pandemic like this, is an impossible task. But, perhaps justifiably with Russia's history, a lot of people question official figures, particularly in Russia, but also very much outside. So I think it's definitely worth asking the question and continuing to look into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one reason for that, or one reason why it is, you know, the in a way, Russia's a special case now because that Putin had to postpone the nationwide vote on the constitutional changes that could allow him to seek the presidency twice more and potentially be president until 2036. So, the response, the government response, and the figures, the numbers, you know, the effects, both in terms of human casualties and the economy, you know, are something that is going to play into the future, of course, in every country, but also in Russia, in the coming weeks and months. So, it's quite, as you say, I think if the way that they are coding or counting fatalities from the coronavirus changes, you know, that's going to change the numbers, could have an effect on the way people think about this. So it will be interesting to see whether that happens. All right. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up for today. Matthew, thanks again for joining us from Moscow today.
Great. It's always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks.
All right. Great insights. And I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening.